Now, Monitor brings you Meet the Press, the prize-winning interview program produced by Lawrence E. Spivak. Four of America's top news reporters are ready for the spontaneous, unrehearsed conference. Here's the moderator of Meet the Press, Ned Brooks.
Welcome once again to Meet the Press. Our guests today are Mr. Carl Sandburg and Mr. Edward Steichen, the famed brother-in-law team of Arts and Letters. Both past 80 years of age, they have been friends for more than a half century. They have just returned from the Soviet Union. They went there as cultural ambassadors for the United States. Carl Sandburg has twice been awarded the Pulitzer Prize, once for poetry, once for history. He has won a lasting place in the hearts of Americans as a poet, biographer, and troubadour. His biography of Abraham Lincoln has been described as the greatest study of an American ever written by another American. Edward Steichen is the greatest photographer in the world, probably the greatest photographer of all time. The photographic collection called The Family of Man, assembled by him to symbolize the universality of man, is on display at the American exhibit in Moscow. It has been seen by millions throughout the world, and it has had an extraordinary impact. In Carl Sandburg's words, it is the greatest epic poem of mankind, that mankind everywhere can read and feel. And now seated around the press table, ready to interview our guests, are Bob Considine of the Hearst Newspapers, Ernest K. Lindley of Newsweek Magazine, Pauline Frederick of NBC News, and Lawrence E. Spivak, our regular member of the Meet the Press panel. And now, if our guests are ready, we'll start the questions with Mr. Spivak.
Mr. Sandburg, before you left for the Soviet Union, you said that the Family of Man, Mr. Steichen's collection, had something very important to tell the Russian people, because, and these were your words, the people of Russia will be able to feel their kinship to the whole Family of Man over the world. Now, you've seen the reaction of some of the Russian people to the Family of Man. What do you think it accomplished with the Russian people?
Well, the press was comparatively silent in Moscow about the Family of Man, but a radio newscaster the second day of the exhibition said that it had the largest attendance of any single feature of the American exhibition, and that those who went in to see the photographs acted as though they were seeing people rather than pictures of people.
You also said all the world, all humanity is alike. There is no iron curtain, no real curtain between people. Now, did you find that true in the Soviet Union despite some 40 years of suppression?
Well, the Family of Man is organized somewhat like a symphony. It proceeds with a series of themes. The likenesses of mankind. And one curious feature of it, the Department of State reports, is that illiterates, people who can't read or write, they get the meanings of nearly every picture there. It begins, of course, with the birth of the world, and always mankind has been interested in the sky. And then love, after love, weddings, then births, then food, upbringing of children, and a whole series of themes, games, fun, music, everywhere some kind of music. And in Guatemala, it was reported on a Sunday afternoon, the last day of 6 weeks of the exhibition there, some 3,000 barefooted Indians came in from the country. They had heard about this. Illiterates. But they went around slowly, took it all in, and they understood. And so I claim, and I'm willing to debate anywhere, that it's the greatest epic poem about mankind that all of mankind can understand.
As you talk to these people at the fair who are watching the exhibit, Did you have any feeling at all that the absence of liberty among the Russian people for 40 years has had an effect upon human beings as human beings?
You couldn't read anything like that on their faces. And the more I mingled with common people on the streets and the intellectuals, I came to a feeling that something that happens so often in a free country. You can say what you don't mean, and it probably won't be held against you unless some Joe McCarthy is riding high. And banter such as newspapermen indulge in, all good newspapermen, they have to write seriously for their papers, but among each other, they say all sorts of things that ain't so at all, that can be held against them. They're very careful how they do that, on the streets or in meetings. I imagine that there are small circles here and there where they're good friends. They understand each other. They understand each other so well, they have no fear of being reported. And there they have fun of a kind that we saw in a pub in London, perhaps 20 or more couples, young people, all the way from 18 to 30. And the exchanges among them, the laughter and the free talk, we saw nothing like it in Russia.
Miss Frederick.
Mr. Steichen, you have now seen the Russian exhibit in New York, the American exhibit in Moscow. Which would you say has done the better job of selling visitors on a way of life?
I think that's an impossible question to answer.
I thought you could do the impossible.
Some people said I did the impossible in organizing the exhibition, but I find this reaction is about the same. I've seen it in four countries. I saw it here, in Paris, Berlin, and in Moscow. And I find that the people's reaction is always practically the same. In Russia, there were so many visitors there. There were hordes of people going through that exhibition, that it was impossible for some of them to see the exhibition. They just pushed through. But those that stopped or were really curious, you see the same expression in the beginning, astonishment, and then there's a sweetness that came into their faces. I've always been reminded of a Japanese poem. When you look into a mirror, you do not see your reflection. Your reflection sees you. I think that's what happens in this exhibition. The people participate. They look upon them as people, and the people look back at them. I found the same reaction in Russia that I did here in Berlin or in Paris.
Mr. Lindley.
Mr. Sandberg, you met with a group of Soviet writers, perhaps several groups. What did you talk with them about? And what sort of reaction did you get?
Well, Steichen and I agreed that we would say somewhere in connection with this meeting this afternoon that Will Rogers had something on the ball 25 years ago when he said that whatever anybody says coming out of Russia is so. And we also, there's that newspaper Pravda, the word truth. We wondered whether you, the panel, would put to us, us two witnesses here, under oath. Do you solemnly swear you will tell the Pravda, the whole Pravda, and nothing but the Pravda?
Carl, I'd like to draw attention to another one of Will Rogers. We are all ignorant, but on different subjects. And obviously, Russia is about as ignorant about America as the cave dweller.
What did you try to tell the Soviet writers, Mr. Sandberg, when you talked with them?
We We tried to tell them the Pravda, but we hesitated about discussing human rights. They are the big main subject on which they have freedom is productivity. You have perfect freedom of the mind if you are pursuing the topic of how to get more of these does and them that have to do with living, with eating, sleeping, transportation, with crops. Anyone who has a contribution to make to productivity, yes. But in the field of human rights, you feel you're getting into something that's alien. They have their various ways of ducking away from real discussion of habeas corpus or domestic tranquility or any of the subjects mentioned in the Constitution and the Declaration.
Mr. Sandberg, have any of your works, either your poetry or your Great Life of Lincoln, been translated into Russian?
The groups of poems have occasionally been published in magazines, and international literature has a group coming along that are a little left of center.
Did you see Boris Pasternak or attempt to see him?
No, I didn't try to see him, if only on the matter of time. Every day counted. I accept part of the criticism made of him, that the storm of the revolution, the stench of it, was worse than he put it down. And he neglected the dream of those fellows who did what the Continental soldiers under George Washington did. They were willing to serve and give all they had for the revolution, not knowing what direction it would take after power had come to them.
Did you discuss with any Soviet writers or officials the treatment of Pasternak on account of that book, Dr. Zhivago?
No, I thought that would be a waste of time. They could... I saw their published declarations to him, and they were that extreme that I thought they came from orders from above, and at once the atmosphere would be frozen.
Did you detect any sign of independent thinking in the political sphere, which includes literature in Russia, among your talks with the Soviet writers?
Very little, very little. On productivity, yes. And on, there are going to be more in the future. On housing, for instance, they know how bitter the situation is. So many families living in one room. But you could tell by the new buildings as you enter Moscow that there has been progress in housing. But it's still hard to look at there.
Mr. Considine.
Captain Steichen, I agree with your distinguished brother-in-law that is an epic poem, The Family of Man. A magnificent work, as we all know. But it lost one of its stanzas the other day. I see that this particularly poignant photograph of George Silks, I believe, taken, which symbolizes the hunger of the world, was given the bomb's rush, let's say, out of the exhibit. Do you have any comment on your lost stanza?
Yes, I didn't like to see the picture go. It was one of a series of pictures showing famine. I think they had some leg to stand on, because there was an understanding between our government and their government that there was to be nothing in the nature of propaganda in any of these exhibitions. Now, I could see how they would stretch that as anti-communist propaganda. However, they did not object to the picture, which was much more significant, of famine in India. They just chose that particular one.
Repeating one of Ernie's questions, did you make any effort to see Pasternak yourself?
No. My personal feeling would be we might have embarrassed the man. I expressed myself very strongly to some of the writers that we met, and I said that the thing that we in America objected to most was not the government's attitude, but the scathing denunciation he got from his colleagues.
We tried to see Marshal Zhukov a couple of years ago when Bill Hurst and Frank Kniff and I were there, and they always had an excuse like, oh, he's on leave. You wouldn't want to interrupt his vacation, would you? Well, we'd like to fly you down there, but you wouldn't want to fly on a day like this, would you? You always had a good excuse.
Mr. Spivak.
Mr. Steichen, you've spent a lifetime studying and observing people, and I know you saw a great many Russians at close range in your recent exhibit. Could you tell from those faces and from your exchanges with them whether this was a happy people, the kind of happy people that you find in free nations?
Well, happiness, real happiness, is an inner thing. It's a very difficult thing to see. I found in their daily behavior that they were just like everybody else. They're very lovable people. One thing that was very curious, we saw very few children. Fortunately, I was glad that they didn't drag them to the exhibition, but even on the streets, very few. They're great. They're very active. They move fast. They look well-fed. They were well-dressed. The women wore simple frocks, but they were all attractive. And as human beings, I would rate them as very close. As a matter of fact, I think they are almost more like us in many ways than any other people I've met.
Were there any surprises at all for you on your visit there? Anything that you didn't know or didn't expect?
Yes, I mean, that was what we went there for, because there were a lot of things that we didn't know. I've often said that Carl was an old man because he was 81, I'm only 80, and he says, I got a heck of a lot to learn, therefore. So I went out to learn.
What? Were there any surprises to you that you could think of?
The lady from Waterloo, Iowa.
Yes. We were standing out in front of our monstrosity called a hotel. I mean, monstrosity from an aesthetic standpoint. And a woman came up and says, isn't it awful the poverty you see around here? And I said, where did you see it? Oh, she said, all over. Well, I didn't see any sign of any poverty.
Well, you two, when you left, a friend of yours told you, according to you, that when you two fellas walk arm in arm down Red Square, that's the end of the Iron Curtain. Did you make a dent, at least?
Well, I'd rather have a Russian answer that.
Carl, have you got an answer to that? Did you make a dent, do you think?
I would annotate what he was saying about what we saw. We saw more babes in arms on the streets of London in 2 days than we did in 2 weeks in Moscow. Where they hide their babies in Moscow, we don't know. Probably public depositories of some sort, but in London it was frequent, a baby in arms. And we believed that the people in Moscow walked faster than we see them in New York and Chicago. Why, I don't know. And he and I always argued about the poor women sweeping the streets. I saw one woman sweeping the streets that would have made a ballet dancer. The muscles she had to do the work she was doing, I said to myself, I would rather have her life than that of the general run of women who consult psychiatrists.
Miss Frederick.
Mr. Sandberg, we're hearing a great deal of talk that we must stand firm in the face of possible blandishments by Premier Khrushchev when he comes here. Now, you have been to Russia and have seen something of Russia and of the Russian people. How do you think the American people should react to Mr. Khrushchev when he comes here?
Well, from the preliminaries by the American Legion and other forces, I don't know. Mr. Khrushchev does the unexpected. He may cut loose. There's no telling at all what he will say to the American people if that kind of criticism continues. It was all right for some cartoonist, the idea to occur to him that on the ticker tape ride of Khrushchev up Fifth Avenue, there would be, besides ticker tape, there would be typewriters, inkwells, and heavy articles heading toward his head. And the cartoonist was free to do that. But I hope nothing like it happens.
Mr. Sandberg, what would you like Mr. Khrushchev to see when he comes to this country so that he gets an accurate picture of the United States?
As I look at the cities that he's scheduled to see, I think he'll be shown much that will be of interest to him. I think that he will leave this country feeling that he knows it better. And there are going to be some people in this country that know a good actor when they see one.
Mr. Lindley.
Mr. Steichen, when we were talking informally a while ago, you mentioned a trip to a children's camp, and you seemed to attach great significance to that. I think you said you thought it was the key to much that's going on in the Soviet Union. I wonder if you could tell us briefly what the significance of that was, and what you saw there.
Well, that was the beginning of confirmation. There's where they begin, the children. This was a children's camp, 30 or 40 miles outside of Russia, maintained by a shop, by the Union of Machinists or something. 200 or 300 children supposed to be there. We saw 25 or 30 of them while we were there. There's a clock in the center of the camp. Around the hours of the clock, there's a picture of what they are supposed to be doing each one of those 24 hours. The citations that were given to the prize pupils in previous years began with the word that they accepted discipline. We saw kids playing, four lovely little young girls playing a game of some kind. It was chanted some words and their hands collectively dashed onto the table. I asked the headmistress there what this game was about. She says, "Oh, that's a silly game they invented. I must stop that." This stopping any personal initiative, anything that excites imagination, I think that's where the whole system begins.
And you think they've been doing that effectively for a long time?
I think Stalin began that.
Did you find any significant signs of dissent or independent thought among any of the Russians with whom you talk, in the political sphere or the literary sphere?
Not in the political sphere. That was almost a taboo subject. You ran up against the blank wall time you referred to anything of that nature. But I did meet a young poet and three artists, independent work. As a matter of fact, I brought with me, and I own now, the first completely abstract painting come out of Russia. There's a sculptor there. I'm not going to mention any names of this. I don't want to get these boys into trouble. But this sculptor is one of the leading figures in sculpture today. I brought one of his things along. It's a little statuette of a man digging a bayonet into his hips, wounding himself during the war so as to avoid torture. Now, that's... they're thinking freely. The poet who introduced me to these men, I know I can't understand Russian enough, but talking with him, I found him a brilliant and independent thinking youngster. Now, this is two or three swallows don't make a summer, but it makes a dent. But if we have any illusion that there's going to be a radical change in Russia along those lines, a revolution of any kind, that's as far removed from it as changing the position of the sun and the moon.
Mr. Considine.
Carl Sandburg, as you know, we had a battery of voting machines there at Moscow at the exhibition. And one of the things that the Russian peoples could vote upon, were the choice of great statesmen. Now, they always picked Lincoln over the revolutionary George Washington or over F.D. Roosevelt, who gave them $11 billion. Why does Lincoln appeal to the Russians more than those two, let's say?
Well, because he had a partner. There were two angles to that. He had a career of violence that surpassed any of the Bolsheviks. He was not afraid of a civil war, projecting it in order for the sake of the Union. The Union was first with him. But secondarily, in order to get Union and in order to keep France or Britain from interfering, he issued the Emancipation Proclamation and freeing 300 slaves who were on the tax books as property. That was something that appealed to them. The violence and the break from the past appeals to them, so that Lincoln has a certain fascination for them, not parallel to that Lenin has, but it's there.
It certainly is. It's a wonderful head of him there.
But one impression...
Mr. Sandberg, I'm afraid we can't go on any farther. Our time seems to be running out. I'm very sorry to have to interrupt. Thank you very much, Mr. Sandberg and Mr. Steichen, for being with us.
Monitor's thanks to Carl Sandberg and Edward Steichen and the members of the Meet the Press panel for a stimulating and enlightening half-hour. Meet the Press, produced by Lawrence Spivak. Now this personal word, if I may. Are there children in your family? If there are, you naturally want them to have the best possible start in life. And one of the most important advantages they can have is good eyesight. That calls for two important things, eye care and eye safety. Be sure your children have a professional eye examination before entering school. Watch for telltale signs of eye trouble, such as rubbing the eyes, squinting, or holding books too close to the eyes. Most eye accidents to children happen during unsupervised play or where trained leadership is lacking. Facts about proper eye care for children, teenagers, and adults are contained in a new leaflet prepared by the National Society for the Prevention of Blindness. For the free folder on eye care, write Prevention of Blindness, Department N, Box 426, Radio City Station, New York 19, New York. News in the moment. Monitor, of course, continues, and I see the spinning red hand on the clock has given me just a few seconds to say it's particularly warming to be back home in the communicator's chair here at Radio Central after a deeply impressive and revealing study in two brief weeks of Moscow and Leningrad. This is Ben Grauer saying thank you and good night.
This is Monitor, the NBC Weekend Radio Service.